Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. It's Thursday, January 31st, 2019, 3 days away. My math is correct. 3 days away, or three, 4 days away. I don't know. A bunch of days away from Super Bowl LIII. A lot of Super Bowls in the past. One particular Super Bowl 18 years ago, Patriots Rams. 17 years ago, I should say. I'm screwing this whole thing up. 17 years ago, Patriots Rams. We have a rematch of that very famous Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. Joining us to talk about that later on will be Nick Stevens, who covers the Patriots. Right now, we're going to start with a former guest of the show, someone who covers the Rams for us at ESPN, to talk about all things Rams in advance of the Super Bowl. It's ESPN's Lindsay Theory. Lindsay, how are you?
Good, Bill. You know, it's funny. I don't really know what day it is and how long until the Super Bowl, but it seems like it's taking absolutely forever to get here.
I mean, I feel like at this point, like, I just want them to play. Like, I don't, obviously there is the whole flu thing possibly going around that maybe from, I think, Johnny Hecker's one-year-old son, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't hear about Johnny's son, but I know there's been a couple different guys on the team who have had an illness and a couple of other guys who did deal with the flu earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. So some sort of illness, I feel like. But otherwise, like, we're all ready to go. Like, I can't imagine there's going to be a lot of stuff that's suddenly going to be, you know, like, the Rams aren't going to land on some kind of, like, tape reveal about, oh, this is how we can stop the Patriots. Like, I think everyone, it seems like, is ready just to go and play this game, but we're still several days away.
Yeah, they are ready to go. I was walking around media availability today and talking to a bunch of the guys, and they kind of just have this wide-eyed look of, okay, now we've met with reporters for the last, three or four days and for an hour at a time. And, you know, there's only so many times they can answer questions about we, not me, and how amazing the 33-year-old Sean McVay is before they're kind of like, all right, let's just go play the football game now.
Do you think any fact in the history of facts has been more amazing to the assembled media than how young Sean McVay is?
But it is kind of amazing. I mean, I didn't think about it. I'm about Sean McVay's age, and I can't fix myself lunch every day, and I barely get my laundry done. And this guy's 33 years old and is taking a team that won four games, and 2 years later they're in the Super Bowl. And it's pretty remarkable what he's been able to accomplish, given I know he came up the ranks through the NFL, and he really did climb the ladder from – you know, being a low-level assistant to now the head coach. But it is still, to me, pretty remarkable how quickly he did it and just exactly how successful he's been.
Yeah, well, let me start with that. In terms of just the context of this season as a whole for the Rams, you think about what they did last offseason. I was actually just talking about this on a Twitter show we did. I was thinking about what we talked about before the year when it came to the Rams. And there are so many players on this team, and some of this is obviously Sean McVay, some of this is Wade Phillips, but especially on the defensive side of the ball, so many players who, for one reason or another, had a reputation as someone who was going to be, you know, kind of a nuisance or kind of a mess in the locker room. And Marcus Peters, of course, with Kansas City, Aqib Talib with Denver, Ndamukong Suh with the Miami Dolphins, even Dante Fowler, who they acquired in midseason from the Jacksonville Jaguars. And it seems like, you know, obviously I'm not privy to what's happening in the locker room. I think you'd have a much better sense of that than me, of course, but we don't hear those same stories about the Rams. It's not like we're hearing all week, like, oh, this is a fractured locker room and they're just going to overcome that and try to win. Like, it seems like everyone is kind of on board and heading in the same direction. So, is there anything in particular you noticed either the players attributing that to, or something that you feel like you've noticed about Sean McVay or Wade Phillips that you feel like, you know, leads you to believe that they're doing a better job with those players who had those reputations elsewhere?
Well, I think that winning probably is the cheer hall for everything, right? If you are winning, there's not much controversy to be had. There's not going to be a divide. There's not going to be the defense versus the offense. So there's not going to be, you know, one position group that's getting angry at the other position group for not pulling their weight when they all are winning 13 games in the regular season and on to the Super Bowl. So I think that has a lot to do with it. But I also think that when these guys came in, they understood that this is a very tight-knit locker room. This is a tight-knit group, and they had a goal in mind to come to the Super Bowl, and they weren't going to take any nonsense, you know. Marcus Peters has been himself to a degree, but he also has toned it down a little bit from some of the earlier season rants we saw him go on. And make no mistake about it, there's voices in that organization who said, you know, this is not the look that we want, this is not the look that we will have. So there's not a lot of messing around. The guys in that locker room all know, I'm going to repeat a Sean McVay phrase here, what the standard is. The standard is the standard, as they always say. And they don't have any exceptions. Nobody is kind of above those rules.
Yeah, it certainly seems like that's the case. And in terms of Peters, he's had a really fascinating year in that you sort of figured he would either be really good or he would be really problematic in some ways. And instead, it's kind of really been neither. Like, he's had a little bit of issues here and there, but nothing as big as what we saw in Kansas City. At the same time, I don't think it'd be fair to say he's playing at the same level he was in Kansas City. He struggled a bit more. He's been sort of the target, especially when Tlaib was out. It felt like he wasn't able to really hold down, you know, that number one cornerback role. Do you think, you know, what do you think of how the Rams perceive Peters at this point, given what they expected heading into the year? Is he someone who you think they still want to keep around for the long term?
You know, I don't really have a good sense of that. I know my perception would be that through the first half of the season, there were some serious question marks about whether this is a guy we're going to have, you know, stick around. He gave up so many explosive plays, and, you know, obviously the real picture of that is the 72-yard pass to Michael Thomas in Week 9 that Marcus gave up with the Saints when he wasn't even positioned as the ball was snapped in Drew Brees, and that was the, you know, the gumbo pass right there. But I think that he's kind of honed himself in, and he's taking direction a bit better. And I know that Wade Phillips also realized, hey, maybe they weren't putting Marcus in the best place to succeed. And so Wade Phillips has made a few adjustments to some of his game plans to try and utilize Marcus' talents, which really are diagnosing a play and taking a little bit of a gamble. But the way he was kind of gambling, playing press man coverage earlier this season, that was not a gamble that was ever paying off.
Right, yeah. It certainly seems like that was something he did a lot in Kansas City, but, you know, I mean, it's something you can get beat at. I think it's one of those things where the risk is a lot higher. You know, if you get beat in zone coverage, usually, you know, you're at least have a sense of you have some sort of depth to work with. Get beat in press man, well, suddenly there's a guy running past you for a big play. So that's certainly makes sense, kind of limits how much damage I guess he can really do. But it's obviously a really fascinating defense. Aqib Talib has made a big difference since coming back. And I think a defense, it seems like, that is really sort of, you know, how can I put it? They've really sort of reacted positively when they've been down. I mean, you think about that Saints game, for example. You know, they were down first drive of the game. Saints move the ball down the field, end up nearly scoring a touchdown, drop pass, end up kicking a field goal. The offense turns the ball over. They're in trouble. The Rams defense comes up with the stop, force another field goal. And then from that point forward, they allowed one more touchdown, but for most of the game, it then really kind of slowed the Saints down in the second half, really sort of improved. So very resilient, I think, is the word I was thinking of. But do you feel like, you know, as the season's gone on, has this team grown more resilient? Is there something you've seen, something about this team that's changed over the course of the year that really stands out to you? Or has it just been kind of consistently, you know, the same sort of caliber of team all season?
Yeah, I think they've been pretty consistent throughout the season now. I think in the playoffs, there's definitely been an uptick in, you hate to say an effort, but I think almost an effort from Ndamukong Suh and a couple players on the defense, and really just more of a focus. Something that Bill Johnson, their defensive line coach, really, really emphasized was that they needed to earn the right to rush the passer. In order to do that, they needed to stop the run. We all know going into that first playoff game against the Cowboys, it was widely publicized that they allowed a league worst 5.1 yards, allowed an average of 5.1 yards per rush. And that was something they took personal, to be a team that's going in the playoffs and be, you know, told they're the worst at something. And so they really focused on stopping the run. And the results, I mean, through the two playoff games were outstanding for them. Yeah. So I think same team through the season, and then the playoffs came and they kind of bought into, you know, that final part of what it means to be like a Super Bowl team, where maybe some individual accolades don't really matter so much, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it seems like, you know, if they win the Super Bowl, I think everyone is going to be in great shape. And a lot of guys who are on this roster who are either, you know, their contracts are coming up, like Peters or Sue, you know, it's really going to revitalize their career, but really just push them in a positive situation. They can go out and say, hey, look, you know, like, I won a Super Bowl. I was a big part of a team that played at a high level and ended up winning the ultimate prize. All right, we'll be back with Lindsay Theory talking about the Rams and the Super Bowl in a second. First, I wanted to talk about our friends at ZipRecruiter. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know I'm always recommending that NFL teams, perhaps teams in other sports, anyone who needs to be hiring a person for a job should be looking at ZipRecruiter, because ZipRecruiter is different from every other hiring site out there. Instead of you posting your job on one site and waiting for the candidates to come in, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for your job for you. They do the work instead of you doing the work. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and then actively invites them to apply to your job. So instead of getting just waste of time candidates, people who do not have the skills you want for your job, ZipRecruiter finds quality candidates and gets them to you quickly and reliably. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., which comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. If you like the Bill Barnwell Show, I hope you do, of course. Share your support to it and support ZipRecruiter, who's nice enough to sponsor the show, by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show. I have to ask you this question. I don't know if your answer is going to be very satisfying for you. I feel like you've answered this question a billion times over the course of this week, and I think you know where I'm going. The Todd Gurley, CJ Anderson situation. So
actually, I didn't know where you were going with that for a minute. What is this one?
No, I feel like Gurley Anderson, I'm sure you've been asked a billion times, not only this week, but over the course of the past few weeks. I mean, what is your read on this situation? Of course, we've heard he's healthy. We've heard he's going to have a big role in the Super Bowl. Do you buy both those things, or do you think there's more than what the Rams are saying publicly about Todd Gurley's health and availability?
Look, I will not be shocked if the Rams have to announce after the season that Todd Gurley is having a procedure on his knee. That will not surprise me. Now, that being said, I do not think it was some conspiracy theory of why Todd was on the sideline because of his knee or he was hurt. I think Todd Gurley was fine against the New Orleans Saints. He came off 100-plus rushing yards in that Dallas Cowboys game. When he carried the ball against the Saints, he looked fresh. That 6-yard touchdown run, he looked good. I know Sean McVay has pointed to that. And I remember just watching him being like, wow, that was a burst. You could see him really run with a purpose. That was, of course, after he had those two uncharacteristic mistakes, that pass that bounced off his hands and then was intercepted, and then that other red zone pass that just literally bounced off his hands and was wide open, fell onto the turf. And so when you saw Gurley have that 6-yard touchdown carry, you could tell he had a little extra burst in him to prove, like, I'm fine, and those were dumb mistakes. Now, all that being said, I don't know why Sean McVay didn't use him. I mean, Sean just basically said it was the game flow, and I tend to believe him. I don't think it has anything to do with Todd Gurley's knee. He just wasn't playing well. His head didn't seem to be in it, and it just seemed like CJ was a more reliable guy in those situations. So I don't know if that really answers your question. I do think that there is a little something up with Todd Gurley's knee, and that will be probably addressed after the season. However, I do not think that is what kept him sidelined for most of the game against the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, it was really weird because, like you said, I mean, he had those mental mistakes, it seems like. Your knee's not going to make you drop a pass, and he's not going to make you, drop a pass that turns into an interception. And he didn't look necessarily great as a runner, but he looked fine.
How would a knee do that, Bill?
Right.
Oh,
right, exactly.
He's dropping passes. His knee must be bothering him. Like, no, I think his knee's okay. Not going to go out there and risk, his entire career to play on a knee that's, he can't play on. So it's
right.
I tend to actually, I don't think his knee doesn't feel amazing, but I don't think that knee, again, is the reason why he was on the bench.
Mm-hmm. So now let me ask you about the Super Bowl. I mean, to you, was that a one-time thing where he was sort of struggling, his head wasn't in it, maybe the pressure was on him of a big game where they were going to be relying upon him? Now, obviously, the NFC Championship is a huge game. It does not compare to the Super Bowl in terms of the magnitude. It's several orders of magnitude bigger than any other game, really, Todd Gurley's played in as a professional. So, I mean, do you think that would worry the Rams, that maybe Gurley, that his head's not going to be in the game, and they might want to start with more CJ Anderson than you might figure, and then maybe work Gurley in as the game goes on? Or do you think it's going to be, you know, Gurley starts, and if Gurley looks good, he's going to be the guy for the majority of the game?
Yeah, no, Todd Gurley is their starting running back. Todd Gurley is the highest paid running back in NFL history. He is the guy who this offense really was kind of designed to tick around last season. He's been the go-to factor in this offense this season. This offense doesn't work without everything that Todd Gurley can provide, whether that's running the football or catching passes out of the backfield or is blocking. I mean, he's just so exceptional in so many areas that I have no doubt Sean McVay is going to run him out there and get him going as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like that's the most logical thing. And I think, you know, C.J. Anderson's been very impressive. He's really done a great job of emerging as a factor on this football team and someone I think even the Rams couldn't have expected would be this sort of player. Do you think there is appetite on both sides to have C.J. Anderson come back and be a part of this team next year, even if you figure Todd Gurley's going to be 100% and be the primary back?
I'd be a little bit surprised if that happened.
Really?
Just based on money and then the kind of other needs the Rams have. They do have Malcolm Brown, who is was sent to the IR because of a shoulder or a clavicle injury, I should say, earlier this season. But I think it will open Sean McVay's eyes perhaps a little more to the benefits of having two running backs, two different style running backs. Malcolm Brown is very similar as a back to C.J. Anderson. You have to tackle them differently. I talked to a couple of the Rams defenders about, you know, what it's like to go against two backs of different styles like this. And they said it's a great challenge. And you know what? That's probably also in part what made CJ so much more effective in the final game was because teams are kind of preparing for Todd Gurley and what they recall of Todd Gurley. But then all of a sudden, they're not expecting a CJ Anderson who you have to tackle at a completely different angle. And Todd Gurley will take, you know, angles on you that CJ could never dream of. So the guys I spoke with said really just that two back factor and with such different styles is what made them so good. And I suspect that going into the Super Bowl that Sean McVay knows that. And that's why it's also probably important for him to get Gurley going. But then, that kind of helps augment the runs by CJ Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this Rams team still feels a little disrespected? Do you think there's still that perception maybe of, like we talked earlier in the year about, Jared Goff being a system quarterback and how his team really rallied around that idea, thinking that idea was ludicrous, where you have a 33-year-old coach going up against the best coach possibly in NFL history in Bill Belichick. Do you think they still feel a sense that that the sort of national conversation sort of doesn't treat them the same way we're treating the Patriots right now?
Yeah, I don't think that they do, with the exception of Jared Goff. As far as this team goes, they knew early in the season, I mean, they were picked to win the Super Bowl by a lot of people before they even played a single down this season. So the expectation for them has been there all year. For whatever reason, they're not really a team that commands much spotlight, I guess. But they know that the expectation has been to get to the Super Bowl, even as other things have gone on around the league, you know, whether it be the Saints or the Chiefs. And now it's the Patriots. And I think that there certainly is a very healthy amount of respect for the Patriots and what they've done. I mean, Tom Brady is going for his 6th Super Bowl ring. So that's pretty wild when you have 4 guys who've been to a Super Bowl altogether on your team. But I don't think that that's really a motivating factor for anyone other than Jared Goff, like I said. Jared got a little testy before the Rams left for Atlanta. He was asked several days in a row by different reporters that rolled through their training facility about those couple of weeks, week 12 was a bye, but week 13 through week 15, when he had that slump. And he emphatically said, and Jared doesn't usually kind of, he didn't raise his voice, but he doesn't usually kind of speak in stern tones. Mm-hmm. And said, you know, this is the only room where that continues to be brought up because I've moved on from it. What were those final 2 games of the season? I beat the Cowboys, you know. Now helped the team to a win over the Saints. So I think Jared has a little chip on his shoulder that for whatever reason people still doubt him. But the rest of the team, I don't think that's something that motivates them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that that's something where you think it's going to be part of what the Rams are focused on? Do you think, if do they need Jared Goff to play really well to win this football game, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they need Jared to play mistake-free football. They can't have a sack fumble. They can't have an interception they need Jared Goff to play really well and to, you know, probably make some great throws, and which he has done. We forget he had that perfect passer rating against the Minnesota Vikings where he just absolutely lit it up with Cooper Kupp. He did well against the Chiefs. So Jared's a really, he is a good quarterback, even though the narrative tends to skew and maybe some of his shortcomings and really magnifies a few of his bad games. He has had a consistently good season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think he's someone who, you know, like you said, I maybe not on a snap-to-snap basis. I think there will be plays where he'll look bad, where he'll miss an open receiver, and we'll be like, oh, the guy's not that good. And then he'll make an incredible play on the next series, and we'll think, oh, he's a superstar. He's a young quarterback, and he's someone who I think is still sort of looking for that sort of consistency. But on the whole, when you look at his entire season, his entire body of work, he's been great under Sean McVay. And I think unless, you know, unless there's something he's not expecting, unless the Patriots find some way to really slow down the Rams' running game and really force him to be in third and long over and over and over again, I think he has every reason to think he's going to have a good game against the Patriots on Sunday. And to me, I think, you know, maybe they could pull it off if they have a great running game and Aaron Donald's dominant, but it does seem like they're going to have to get a pretty good game out of Jared Goff, just given that, you know, Tom Brady is going to be good on the other side of the football field.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest factor in this game is Tom Brady. I think the Rams can kind of weather the emotions that they're likely to feel in the first quarter. If they can get through that first quarter, you know, and the game's within reach and they haven't had any catastrophic errors, that they have a very, very good shot, just pound for pound, to win this game. But the one thing you can't account for is just Tom Brady and the experience. And he obviously knows what to do down the stretch, and that's where Jared Goff just needs to kind of be his unflappable self that he was in the NFC Championship game, and he needs to kind of have the poise that he's had in several situations this season, including playing at home when sometimes it's a little louder when they expect.
Mm-hmm. So finish up with this. Obviously, there are no sleepers in the Super Bowl. Everyone's talking about everyone. Everyone has a story written about them. There are no players who realistically you know, are disappearing. But let me ask you this. Is there a player or a team, and I mentioned this earlier this week on other podcasts, but is there something you think that Monday morning, if the Rams win the Super Bowl, we'll be sitting here and saying we weren't talking enough about this thing before the game or this person or this player or this scheme before the game, and they really excelled on the big stage on Sunday?
Well, we've talked about Greg Zuerlein, the kicker. He's obviously a huge weapon for them. You know, he hit that 57-yarder to the 46, was a 46 and a 57-yarder, I believe, for overtime and to secure the NFC Championship. But I think if I had to pick a player, it's going to be someone on defense. It's going to be a Corey Littleton linebacker, or it's going to be John Johnson, the safety. And we're going to say, wow, we never thought that they would have intercepted the ball and returned it for six or something along those lines. Those guys have been quiet playmakers. John Johnson leads the team in interceptions. Corey Littleton leads the team in tackles. He had his first pick six, one of the final games of the season. So I think it's going to be one of those kind of guys because everyone focuses on Aaron Donald. Everyone knows what Talib can bring. Everyone knows about Marcus Peters and Sue. But I think Corey Littleton or John Johnson are two names that when people watch the game, those guys might have a few game-changing plays that the Rams do win.
Yeah, Patriots do so much in the slot, so much over the middle of the field. So much of what they do is about exploiting those linebackers and those safeties and putting them in disadvantageous situations. So if they can hold up, I mean, you figure Peters and Talib can hold their own on the outside. The Patriots wide receivers, you know, on the outside are not especially great, not the strength of that team by any means. And then you got to figure Donald's going to show up. You got to figure he's going to do something. So Patriots always like to attack the weak spots in another team. If those spots can hold up, suddenly that Rams defense looks pretty stout. So I don't want to make you make a prediction. I know it's not fair. I know that you covered the team for a year.
I'm okay with it.
Right. I feel like you would maybe get in trouble if you did not pick the Rams to win. But do you feel confident that the Rams are likely to win? Do you feel like it's totally up in the air? How do you feel about this game heading into Sunday?
Yeah. You know, my official prediction that I filed at ESPN was 28-24. And I made that prediction before Tony Romo, so nobody can tell me that I, you know, copied Tony Romo. I think he copied me. But I think it's 28-24 Rams. And because like I said, I just think that this team is so good, and they to go into New Orleans and win in the Superdome. And Bill, it was so loud, I could barely compose a tweet because my thoughts were all over the place. It was so loud. So for them to come back from a 13-point deficit against Drew Brees is a really big confidence booster. And, you know, now you get Tom Brady in an environment that's going to be a lot friendlier. Obviously, the stakes are going to be higher, so the emotions might be different. But I think this Rams team, they're a composed group. And like I said, if they can weather any kind of storm that happens in the first quarter because of those emotions, I think they have a really, really good chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a really fun game. Lindsay, fantastic work covering the Rams for us. Where can people check out more of what you're doing before and after the Super Bowl?
On Twitter, at Lindsay Theory. And then, of course, always on ESPN.com, click on the Rams page, and there's going to be all kinds of content, including some of yours, Bill.
A tiny bit of mine. But, Lindsay, always a pleasure. Best of luck. I hope you get some rest after Super Bowl week. But we're going to come back with Nick Stevens here on the Will Barnwell Show after the break. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell at ESPN. We talked to Lindsay Theory about the Rams before the break. Now, of course, as you might figure, no surprise, we're going to talk about the Patriots here in the second segment on the show. And joining me to do that is Nick Stevens. Nick, how are you?
Bill, it's a pleasure to be on the appropriately titled Bill Barnwell Show. Pleasure to be here from beautiful, sunny, frozen Atlanta, Georgia. I was figuring the temperature was so cold because that was the temperature in the heart of Falcons fans having to host the Patriots only 2 years after Super Bowl 51.
Could have been worse, though. I have noticed this walking around this week. So many people, unprompted, just casual conversation, have told me or told the people they're talking to, who I'm apparently eavesdropping on, thank God it's not Saints-Patriots.
That's exactly what I have heard from everybody. I have talked to everyone who's either brought me a meal, poured a beer, folks at the hotel, Uber drivers, or as we say up north, Uber. I've talked to all of them, and to a man, they have all said the same thing. Like, nah, it's okay. Thank God it wasn't the Saints. I can't imagine how miserable this would have been if this was Saints-Patriots for these poor Falcons fans.
I think it would have been incredible, just only because we would have seen Saints fans taunting the greater Atlanta area for the entire week, and that would have been entertaining in its own way.
Yeah, like you thought Atlanta burned when General Sherman made his way to town. Can you imagine if it was the 28-3 team and then the 28-3 fan base who just trolled them relentlessly, making Mardi Gras floats out of it, painting it on walls? It would have just been. I think Atlanta would have just gone on a permanent Airbnb and said, you know what? Y'all can have your own Super Bowl. We're getting out of town.
Yeah, I mean, just a total mess. But, hey, it worked out, and I think we have a really interesting game here with the Rams and the Patriots. From your perspective, I mean, just when you start with New England, think about this is, what, the ninth Super Bowl of the Brady era, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, I'm mostly excited the Patriots made this Super Bowl because it's just great to see, like, you know, an upstart ragtag squad finally get a shot. It's like rooting for the Patriots at this point now. I understand it's like rooting for Facebook, but at the same time, yeah, 3 in a row, 4 out of 5, 9 out of 18. I get it. I'd hate me too if I were you, but I'm not you. I'm me, which is why I love it.
Mm-hmm. But as someone who has been following the Patriots for a long time, do you think that the broader Patriots fans the Patriots fans you interact with, do you get a sense that the whole nobody believes in us, everyone thinks we suck, that sort of Brady stuff that I can't take seriously as a neutral fan, do you feel like the fan base really buys into that?
Lock, stock, and two salty barrels, my man. 100%. Absolutely. Now, I'll tell you, as somebody who, is a card-carrying member of Patriots Nation, if you will, as a member of the Legion of the Massholes and the Insufferable, I get it. And I'm as interested in the Patriots 24/7, 365 as anybody else is. And there was a weird, I don't want to call it maybe a malaise or almost indifference amongst Pats fans for a while following Super Bowl 52. I think now you'd think, well, come on, you've made it to so many. People win some, they lose some. You know, this is going to happen, so what's the big deal? But I think people were a little nonplussed after the whole, why didn't Belichick play Butler? I can't believe the Brady threw for 505 yards. They scored 33 points, and they lost this game to a backup quarterback. So the temperature, it got cold for a long time. And I won't say that interest and passion in those flames of fandom were restoked until basically December, until basically the Patriots kind of got their act together again after the Pittsburgh game. And now all of a sudden, when everyone wrote them off, that's when everyone decided, you know what, I'm into it again. Because if there's one thing New Englanders hate, it's when other people tell them how they should feel about anything, especially Tommy and Belichick.
Mm-hmm. I got yelled at earlier this year for suggesting that Eagles fans might not want to boo the team that was literally raising the Super Bowl the flag an hour earlier when they booed the Eagles off the field at halftime in week one against the Falcons. So I feel like that is a common trope when it comes to some Northeastern team, perhaps.
Sure. And it was such a topsy-turvy season, Bill. I found myself, you know, the guy who basically robbed our dreams and certainly outkicked whatever coverage we had intended for him, Nick Foles, with that epic Super Bowl performance. Although I have a feeling the kind of defense the Patriots played in that game, either one of us probably could have thrown for 350 and three touchdowns. Jeez Louise. But, I mean, it was such a strange season, and I'm so going wherever this takes me because it was 2 days before Christmas, and I was watching a freaking Texans-Eagles game rooting for Nick Foles to deliver so the Patriots could at least get the number two. I mean, that's what 2018 did to me. It made me hate the Eagles, and then I found at the end of the year I was rooting for the Eagles.
That's very strange. That is a very odd experience to find yourself in. I mean, in terms of how the Patriots have actually performed in the postseason, look at the final scores, 41-28 Chargers, 37-31 Chiefs. They had to come back, of course, in the fourth quarter to beat the Chiefs, but I feel like they've been more impressive in the postseason on a play-by-play basis, given how they've performed with a little bit of slip-ups here or there, than those scores indicate, and then I think also relative to how they played during the regular season. Do you agree? I mean, is there something you think they have improved on over the last 2 weeks or last two games, just to say, in the postseason?
Yeah, it's incredible to see a team that was pantsed, whipped, and embarrassed in some of those road losses earlier this year. I mean, just Jacksonville had their way with them. Detroit game, I feel like they just went downtown and paid 46 guys to put on Brady, Michelle, and Gronkowski jerseys and show up at Ford Field. And then, of course, the Titans game. When Nashville was, Pattsville that weekend, it was a complete takeover, and they were out of that game from play one. So to see that team in this odd Jekyll and Hyde kind of season all of a sudden just solve their woes, get the team together, and, you know, dare I say, like, start playing like the Patriots again. That's the thing everybody was saying about the game against the Chargers. It was the most Patriots game they had seen at least all season and maybe in a couple of seasons. And while everyone wants to, you know, point out that it could very well have just been something as simple as, well, Belichick and Brady are going to just, you know, they get out of bed, they win at least 10 games or 11 and, you know, start every season with an AFC East championship. Well, there may be some truth to that. I think the biggest thing was health. I think Gronk needed some time off because at this point he's not even a real person. He's Franken Gronk. He's stitched together from the parts of so many different seasons. I mean, the guy's had surgery on everything, and it's not easy to play tight end and be a sixth offensive lineman at that on a regular basis in this offense. And Brady, I think he was playing with the MCL thing. So the extra time off that he got, I guess you could call them play-bys when you have the Bills and the Jets in December at home to wrap up the East. And then he gets the extra time before the Chargers. And then finally, the fact that they've kind of committed to this 21 personnel formation offense where they're just imposing their will with the middle of their line with Tooney, Andrews, and Big Shaq Mason just pushing people around left and right. Sony Michel and Burkhead, they've kind of become more traditional, taking advantage of everybody playing smaller safeties in the box and having those sort of like Telvin Smith-sized linebackers. The Pats are just going back to good old-fashioned smash-mouth football, and then that sets Brady up as opposed to telling Brady you have to go out there and win the game all by yourself. And it's more traditional than I'm used to, but it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's almost not reminiscent of 2001 because that's a little too extreme of an example, but that was a team that did run the ball a ton and relied so much less on Brady than those teams after the, you know, that 16-0 season did, where Brady was really, you know, took a step forward and was the guy we know now, you know, as capital T, capital B, Tom Brady. But it has been a more balanced attack, and it has been against two teams who were, you know, the Chargers were very good against the run, against the Ravens in the wild card game. The Chiefs, of course, struggled against the run all year. So, you know, it wasn't like they played two teams that had terrible run defense. They played one team that had a terrible run defense, and we saw it happen late in that Chiefs game. Brady, you know, when they needed Brady to come through and with a couple drives to win the game, he did. And also, Rob Gronkowski came through with a couple big catches late in the fourth quarter against the Chiefs to, and overtime, I should say, as well, to win that game for the Patriots. In terms of Gronk, it feels like he's been around forever. This is a guy who's still somehow only 29 years old. He hasn't even turned 30 for a guy who, you know, at times you watch him play at this point and you think about that Dolphins playing the final game. It looked like he might be closer to 40 than 30. But obviously still incredibly impactful when the Patriots do call on him to make a play, and someone who is still a phenomenal athlete. Where does he stand for you in terms of the players you're going to remember, you know, from this Patriots dynasty when it's all said and done?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, because at the same time, I neglected to mention, how could the team that lost, you know, they call it the Miami Miracle down there, and I'm glad they made T-shirts and banners in the 7-9 season for a single play. That's great. The Miami Meltdown for the Patriots, like, Gronk looked like Grandpa getting out of the recliner to have to answer the door because nobody else was there to get it slow on that last play as Kenyon Drake was running into the end zone. And I think everyone thought he was cooked. To see him come back to life and play more like Gronk, he's that thing. I don't know. He's just so New England. He's just so Pats. He's, you know, he's just Gronk. His name doesn't even need to be Rob Gronkowski. He's just like this otherworldly sort of like mascot, rally monkey. He makes the offense go. Like I said, he's a sixth lineman. People love him so much. And I feel like as Gronk goes, so goes the team. Where will Pats fans remember him in time? I think he'll go out top five. I think he'll be remembered as a top five Patriot of the last 25 or 50 years even. And, you know, while this isn't the podcast to do like, all right, who are your top five Patriots? John Hanna, Tom Brady, blah, blah. I think people will do that because he is basically, in a lot of ways, he's like the face of this second iteration of the Patriots. You look at it, it's like two separate potentials, depending on how Sunday goes, fingers crossed, that it could be two separate potential three Super Bowl win runs for the Patriots. And the first time around, it was Brady, but it was more with like Brewski and McGinnis, and then later on Rodney Harris and Ty Law. Those were the faces you remember along with this one for that first run. And now you look at the second time around, and I think it would be once again Brady, and then it would be Edelman and Gronk, and I guess maybe Devin McCourty, although he's a bit more unheralded, doesn't make as many splashy plays. But yeah, the triumvirate really is Brady, Edelman, and Gronk. And I think he'll be a beloved son in New England forever. And I kind of do think if they win Sunday, I think he'd step away.
I think it makes sense for him to step away. You know, what else does the guy have to prove? I think he's a Hall of Famer. You know, even if he retires, you know, after the game on Sunday, obviously he's going to have a bunch of Super Bowls. He's going to have a career as I hesitate to speculate what Gronk might do with his free time post NFL. I would assume pro wrestler seems to make the most sense given that he is.
I mean, can you not see that he and Mojo Rawley are tag team champions within 6 months?
Why, it seems like it's the obvious fit to me, at some point. But yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. I was gonna ask you, actually, who your five biggest Patriots from this dynasty would have been, but apparently this is not the kind of show for that, so I will not ask you, but I'll ask you a different question. I will go in a different direction.
Alright, Brady, Gronk, Edelman, Brewski, McGinnis.
I think that's totally reasonable.
I would say 21st century edition. And I would put Vinatieri in there as well, but now he's played with Indianapolis. So, I can't put Vinatieri. Shouldn't I? Why did he have to play so long with Indianapolis? Oh, any place he could have gone for. He's 46 years old and just signed one more 1-year contract, which is unbelievable. I mean, he looks like somebody who lives in the Yukon and just makes his way down to the Midwest to come kick footballs for 5 months out of the year. It's unbelievable.
I mean, the crazy thing is when the Patriots moved on from Vinatieri, kind of the thought was, oh, well, he's, you know, still a great kicker, but he's getting up on there in age. Don't know how long he's going to be this guy going forward. Let's use our cap money somewhere else. Let's draft Steven Gostkowski. He's had an excellent career with the Patriots as well.
12 years played, running now, Bill. Can you believe that?
13 years running, actually. He played 13 seasons with the Colts now, more than he played with the Patriots. Wow. This is a guy who came into the NFL in 1996. 1996, Bill Parcells was his coach. He was playing, who else was on this roster in 1996? Keith Byers.
In 1996, Keith Byers, we're talking big play Willie Clay. We're talking feature back Curtis Martin, Kevin Turner, Drew Bledsoe.
It's Otis wild.
Otis Man Smith, who returned the fumble against Jacksonville in the AFC Championship.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a different universe, 1996, but
it really does.
Still going.
And when you watch YouTube highlights, you're like, "Wow, was television quality that bad? That awesome? Like, what's with the square picture? I don't understand.
It's so strange to me." But we managed. We made it through. One guy
we did somehow.
One guy I feel like you did not bring up, and I'm not saying, I was going to bring him up anyway, independent of what you were going to say for your five players, and I don't think he's in that top five, but someone who I think maybe nationally we don't appreciate as someone who always seems like the Patriots rely on him in these moments is James White, who I feel like, number one, I think is going to have a big game against the Rams on Sunday, but number two, I just feel like we sort of take him for granted. I mean, sort of did this with Kevin Faulk as well in the role previously, and to some extent Shane Vereen in the in-between years between Faulk and James White. But I just think he's such a valuable player to the Patriots. And I think that when they've been in the Super Bowl, when they've been in big playoff games and they've needed someone to make a play, you know, Edelman's made big plays, obviously incredible catches. Chris Hogan made a big catch. Gronk is going to make your big plays. But for volume, for the guy, okay, we need to get the ball downfield. We need to get 40 yards here in three plays. So frequently, so many times, it feels like it's James White.
Yeah, there were arguments being made in New England the first half of the season that team MVP, if not maybe, you know, and I know this isn't how it works, that the team would ever tell the league, like, here's who we think you should nominate for MVP for our team. People were all about James White because he was so integral to the offense because they couldn't get the passing offense going early in the season. Then they bring in Josh Gordon, and then Brady kind of locked onto him a bit too much. And then the running game got going, so that took some pressure off James White. But I think if you just sort of like, first things first, before I even start heaping praises on the doorstep and throwing laurels and wreaths at James White, of which he deserves all of them, I think maybe people say like, oh, the slot receiver, that's the slot thing. The slot machine, that's what makes the Belichick offense go. That's what's made McDaniels and Brady so successful for all these years. I actually think it's the check down back. Mm-hmm. I think the check down back has been so incredibly important for the Pats because look who caught half the passes when they came back against the Raiders in the snowball. It was J.R. Redmond. Look who caught half the passes on the drive to set up Vinatieri for the 48-yard bomb to beat the Rams 17 years ago. Sidebar, it was so long ago that the Pats played the Rams that if you were born that weekend, you could now go see a rated R movie. That's how long Tom Brady's been playing quarterback. It was J.R. Redmond. And then it was, like you said, Kevin Faulk, who was so great at that for like 7-8 seasons. And then it was Shane Vereen. Oh, then we had a Danny Woodhead interval.
Sure,
then it was Shane Vereen. And now it's been James White. That's the look. That's what bails Brady in this offense out time and again. But I don't think anyone's been better at it than James White. He finds ways to make chips and then sneak out into space and just get first downs. He's so clutch. He's got great hands. Never makes a stink, never asks for anything, just goes out there and gets the job done. And now is probably when you think I'll get into that whole, like, and that's the Patriots thing, you know? They just say, do your job, be a lunch pail guy, put on your hard hat. I mean, but that's what he does. Doesn't get in trouble off the field, team leader. Community pillar, like he's so good at football and being a human, it's almost obnoxious. But and I've talked to him before, and that's the problem too. Couldn't be nicer. Doesn't come out and say like this moment's going to be too big for Jared Goff. You know, he's not going to pull an Anthony Smith or a Nickell Colt or Roby Coleman and say something that he may ultimately regret in a couple of days. Like he's as boring as every other Patriot who appears on sports radio, and that's how we like it.
We want you to be boring, says the radio.
Yeah, be more boring. That's what we do. We stand outside the stadium as the players come in, and we just all yell, be more boring! Be more boring! It's great. It works for them.
What was the Freddie Mitchell Oh, Freddie Mitchell once said...
You mean Fred X?
Fred X once said he only knew the numbers, not the names, of New England's cornerbacks, and said he had something for the veteran strong safety heading into the Super Bowl that year against the Eagles, where I don't think he did much against the Super Bowl. I think that was mostly Terrell Owens. But getting to...
Matched up, mind you, against a wide receiver at cornerback.
Yes, Troy Smith. Someone else could feature into that top
Troy
five,
Brown,
top
yeah.
ten. Patriot, or sorry, Troy Brown. Excuse me. I would say yeah. Troy Smith, but it's not Troy Smith. It's Troy Brown.
We didn't have the Ohio State quarterback in corner. I mean, although would Belichick play it if it was an Urban Meyer guy? Why not?
Why not exactly? So, in terms of Sunday's game, in terms of Patriots Rams, is there some position? Is there some player? Is there some concept? Some element of the game that would concern you? Where if you say, okay, Monday morning, all right, the Patriots lost. We should have seen this problem coming. What would that problem be for you?
The dreaded pressure up the gut.
Yeah.
It's just flat out could be the dreaded pressure up the middle because, you know, Brady hates it when he gets pressured up the middle, when they pressure the middle of the pocket. If this turns into a game where Aaron Donald, who makes J.J. Watt look like a stoner who sits around and just eats Chick-fil-A and drinks Dr. Pepper all day. The guy is just...
That sounds great.
Guy literally looks like a Michelangelo statue that plays
yes.
football. It's unbelievable. And if he and Ndamukong Suh, if Sue decides, okay, this is where I can make my legacy, if he decides to wreck the line, and he loves getting after Brady and gave him some fits in Detroit, but especially in Miami for
yep.
the past couple seasons, if they wreck the middle of that line and Brady's got no time to pass, stop me if you've heard this before, but Captain 1,000 Yards is not exactly does not exactly have blazing lateral speed. And if he can't do his thing where he steps up in the pocket, buys the extra second to hit Gronk or to find Edelman after he makes his second or third move or see wherever James White is hiding out, then it's going to be a long day because I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball with the same effectiveness that they've
right.
that they've had. I think they're going to have to try to pick their spots and exploit what's a kind of sneaky bad linebacking core for the Rams. And so that's why guys like Burkhead trying to get one-on-one matchups. That's why mm-hmm. maybe Chris Hogan, and that's definitely why Gronk, are going to be huge factors because I think Tlaib will probably give Edelman some fits. Maybe Tlaib will even try to work his way over to Gronk every now and again. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, Peters on Patterson – Peter's on Dorsett, whatever. That's a bit of a wash. You know, you don't come to these games, everyone's wondering, what's going to be the Philly special? What'll be the trick play in this game? I don't know, but it's usually your stars who win these games.
Mm-hmm.
And if Tom Brady, the biggest star of them all, doesn't have the time to operate, it's going to be a tough day for the Pats.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. On the flip side, is there someone who, like you said, you think the stars are going to play the biggest roles, but is there someone who comes to mind to you who's not necessarily a star, someone below that Gronk level, who you'd say, okay, well, Monday morning, Pats won, you know, let's get the parade going. This is the guy who's going to be on that first float because of how he played unexpectedly in the Super Bowl. Because I have my pick, but I want to hear what your pick is as well.
Okay, his name would be half English and half French for three flowers. Trey Flowers.
See, you picked my pick. That's infuriating.
No, Barnwell. I had no idea we'd be hive mind, dude.
Oh, incredibly frustrating. Yesterday, I had Dominic Foxworth on the show. He used a stat I was going to put in my column. Infuriating. Today, I have you on, Nick. I'm like, oh, Trey Flowers, such an underrated player, so great in the playoffs last year, had a big role, you know, and you figure they need a pass rush. It makes total sense. That was the guy I was going to pull out of the envelope, and you beat me to it. Infuriating.
Yet, I think, if you look at the defense like the run defense has to put, you know, obviously he's going to have to, you know, do their job because it's going to be tough to stop human, you know, the guy who makes Mike Tolbert look like he just did the whole 30, C.J. Anderson. Guy is a...
I love C.J. Anderson.
When you're
so
bigger
happy.
Than a wrecking ball or a bowling ball, what are you?
I don't know. I'm just so happy he exists and exists in the way he does. It makes me I'm just proud that C.J. Anderson just proved
it's
that, you know what?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's fine. He's fine. I hope he plays this way for 10 years.
Oh, please. Absolutely, as a former fat guy who never got any love, by all means, I embrace it. But I think it's great what he's been able to do. Kicked off a couple teams and finding a second life here, especially when Gurley got all the love in the world. I don't even think he's feeling. Something's not right with him either. But
right,
you know, maybe 2 weeks will benefit Todd Gurley as well. But the reason why I went with Trey Flowers is, while a Dante Hightower can make a big play here or there, mm-hmm. I just don't think he's got, I don't think he's in quite the position. He could, you know, maybe have a, you know, a sack like he did against Matt Ryan, and I'm sure Devontae Freeman still wonders, like, now why didn't I check him when he came in on that play? But Trey Flowers, who had a huge sack in Super Bowl 51, got the only pressures last year in Super mm-hmm. Bowl 52 on Foles, you know, this is his free agency year. And my thinking is this, that with Brian Flores probably, you know, making his way down to be the head coach in Miami, mm-hmm. a scenario I'd be happy with Trey Flowers leaving, not happy, but I'd be okay with, is Trey Flowers having like 7 pressures, 6 hits, 2.5 sacks, and one where he just completely blindsides him, knocks the ball out of Goff's hands, they return it for a touchdown. And he's like a sneaky, you know, Brady gets MVP, but Trey Flowers should have won it the same way James White should have won it for Super Bowl 51. And then they just, and Flores just says, you know, Stephen Ross, I don't care. Just open the checkbook and say, how much do you want Trey Flowers? And, you know, he'd come after us for years, but we'd always say, yeah, but you completely robbed Jared Goff of his soul for us. And for that, we will love you forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question. He has a big game, and he goes to Miami. I think the Patriots should re-sign him, certainly. I think, you know, I don't think they're going to franchise him, but would be a huge addition for them, or to keep him around, a huge retention to keep him around. But we'll see. We'll get to the offseason after Sunday. We still have the Super Bowl to come. But, Nick, if people want to check out more of what you do, where can they do that?
This week I'm actually down in the ATL working for the Patriots. I'll be making a series of videos for Patriots.com under my Patriot Superfan performing pseudonym Fitzy. So I'll be down here. You can check out Patriots.com, and you can follow for tweets about real life. I'm at Ahoy Nick Stevens, but for all of my wildly New England homeristic stuff, it's at Fitzy GFY across your socials, Bill. Pleasure. Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on. This is fun.
Of course, sir, anytime. And we're going to come back next week, Monday. It'll be the Super Bowl recap show. But thanks so much for listening, guys. Appreciate it. Written column up previewing the game on ESPN.com. More audio coming next week.